ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Maybe you're not all aware that this temple is at the site of the what we call the birthplace or the place of appearance of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Goswami Prabhupada. Was anyone not aware of that? Just became aware just now. The glories of Puri Dham are unlimited. The glories of Srila Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada are unlimited. I'm not going to speak on these topics just now. I'm going to speak on topics of Guru Seva, service to Guru. When one particular line, because Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur instructed Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur that he, Saraswati Thakur, had come to this world for two main purposes. One was to propagate Shuddhanam, pure understanding of what is pure chanting of the holy names, as distinguished from Nama Aparadha. That's my commentary. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said Shuddhanama, to preach the glories of the holy name, pure chanting, and to establish Varnashram. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, this Daiva Varnashram. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made a start in doing that by awarding the sacred thread to persons who were Vaishnavas in his shelter, who were initiated by him, even if they were not from Brahmin families or caste families. Our own Srila Prabhupada had a vision of taking the initiative much further to establish Varnashram as the new world order, to use that often considered sinister phrase. Or rather, it's an old world order. People are talking about the new world order. We want to make the old world order. But it will be new, because the world nowadays has no idea of this. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to do that. He made some start, but he left the bulk of the work to his discipular descendants, namely us. If we include in us not just the small group of devotees here present, but the whole world of devotees, Hare Krishna. It's a very great task, and today and tomorrow we want to have some meetings on the little start that we have made. Then that means those of you who are doing that. And specifically, we want to talk about some of the practical challenges that we are facing and that we expect to face. But apart from the nitty-gritty or the nuts and bolts, we have to see the big picture also. What is the ultimate aim? Srila Prabhupada's ultimate aim was that the whole world or large parts of the world population would be chanting Hare Krishna. Priti vite ache jato nagaradi gram sabatra pracha hoibe moranam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted that his name would be preached in all towns and villages of the world. So then we have to start thinking about social organization also. It's inevitable. As Srila Prabhupada said, management follows preaching like a shadow. You can't preach or effectively preach without management also. And when we think of management, when we say management within our ISKCON, we think about managing our temples and traveling Sankirtan parties, but ultimately they have to see to the management of the whole world. It sounds like an almost fantastic that we can hardly manage to get ourselves up in the morning. And I was just thinking about this this morning, that we say that someone has got, you say they have good sadhana, if they follow the minimum that Srila Prabhupada said, we call that good. You know, it's the expected standard is significantly lower than the minimum standard that Srila Prabhupada gave. So good sadhana should be enhanced over the minimum standard that Srila Prabhupada gave. But we call good sadhana if someone manages to get up in the morning, chant 16 rounds, and follow four regulated. Well, that's not really sadhana. So it is a great challenge, but we have to think of this, the big picture, so to speak. What are we aiming at? Where are we going? What is the reality of all this? It may not seem to have much relevance when we're talking about basic things like composing curriculi for the students and discussing how to get money to establish, to purchase land, concerns such as how are we going to run the world don't seem to be very relevant to us. And on the day-to-day basis, they're not. But we should think about, at least we should have that aim, as Srila Prabhupada inculcated, or attempted to inculcate in us. And who knows, Srila Prabhupada said that people will join our farms in their millions. What will you do if 3 months down the line, people start coming and saying, hey, we want to be a part of this, this is great. Or any time the very complex economic system that strangleholds the whole modern world could break down, either globally or locally, causing chaos. Or the chaos may precede the breakdown, just like in some parts of the world there are wars, and then the food supply is stopped and people starve, and any time. If the in a big city, if the electric supply stops, the city can't function. If the, for some reason or other, the food supply stops, there's not enough oil. India is very, as a nation, India is very, actually most of the countries of the world, most of the countries that have oil are not the ones that use it much. So India is very vulnerable in this regard. The whole society runs on oil, and India is largely a net importer of oil. So the economic system is very fragile. There can be collapse. Water supplies in a city, if for any reason it doesn't happen. In India, of course, not so much here in Orissa, but inland in places like Hyderabad, and certainly in Gujarat in the 1980s, there were 6 years of continuous severe drought. So things can break down. So it may be that people will come in, and they may come in their hundreds and thousands, and what do? We have to think of the bigger picture also. So I'm going to talk about that a little bit this morning. Another point is that we may not come to this stage of world dominance of Vaishnavism, or we may not see much progress toward this within our lifetimes. It might happen a few generations down the line. And many devotees, although I don't know, those who express faith in Srila Prabhupada's desires, I don't know if, I feel a little reluctant even to call them devotees, but anyway, they're identified as devotees. They say, this Devan Ashram, it can't work. And even a prominent GBC member has expressed disgust at the very word Varnashram. It's not a popular project within the movement that is supposed to be Srila Prabhupada's movement. But even if it doesn't work, even if in 10 years' time all these projects that we started are no longer going on, for whatever reason, still, Neha Bhikraman Nahashasti Pratyavayo Navidyate Swapam Apyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahato Bhayat. There's no failure. Srila Prabhupada, when he was preaching in Jhansi, it was a failure, wasn't it? No. Everyone Srila Prabhupada spoke to and interacted with was eternally benefited. In the first year of Srila Prabhupada's stay in America, no progress. Was it a failure? No. Everyone was benefited. So, even if these projects that were, well, they have started, even if for some reason or other they don't go on, still, whatever has been done in sincere devotional service is to the eternal benefit of everyone. And the fact that some devotees for some time were not caught up in this hellish city life and could live together and chant Hare Krishna together, that in itself is progress. So at the very least, we can say that immediately we are making some facilities so that Grihastha devotees in particular, who can't live as brahmacharis do, they can all live together and be Krishna conscious together, be in a situation in which they can live in Krishna consciousness in a way that for almost all Grihasthas living in cities is not possible. Hindi anuvad ho raha hai. Hindi anuvad waha par ho raha hai. So the big picture. What is the big picture? We're tiny little beings. What is the big picture that we fit into or that we want to be part of? In this regard, I'll read some points which have been sent by Krishna Kirti Prabhu, who is, you could say, an ideologist following in Srila Prabhupada's footsteps, about the establishment of Varnashram civilization. How do we We're talking about simple living and high thinking. How does that work in a highly industrialized, mechanized, globalized, commercialized, degraded modern civilization? How can it practically work? There are some practical considerations we have to think of. And when we're talking about I said we're going to talk about practical things, and we're talking about that at our present level, but in the long term, if we're talking about Varnashram civilization, how is it going to work? Krishnakirti Prabhu's points. The form of a future Varnashram civilization follows from the simple fact that the present state and direction of modern science and technology confer upon its bearers a decisive military advantage. Present and future conflicts throughout the world will not be fought with chariots, bows and arrows, but with machine guns, tanks, planes, and nuclear missiles. Protecting and advancing the spiritual agrarian culture of Varnashram for the foreseeable future therefore necessarily requires the co-advancement of science, technology, and industry. This is a very important point, because we're talking about simple living and high thinking. But practically, we can only live simply if those who have military and political power allow us to. We find that even within our movement, there's much, not so much opposition at this stage, but distrust of moves to go to the land and live simply. So if even those who are members of, or supposed to be followers of Srila Prabhupada, are allergic to the very idea of simple living and high thinking, as Srila Prabhupada spoke of, then what can we expect from the broader society? Actually, I think we can expect quite a lot. Maybe more than we can expect from our devotees. In the early days of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada's followers were mostly disaffected youth from the Western world. Disaffected means they were fed up of the modern way of life and they were looking for an alternative. Whereas nowadays, most of the members of the Krishna Conscious Movement are from Indian background, either Indian citizens or of Indian extract in other parts of the world. Although most of them, I don't know if it's most, we didn't do any census, but certainly a significant number come from an Indian background. And disaffection with the modern way of life is not a prominent feature of the Indian psyche at the present time. Indians, when they go to America, for instance, usually do very well materially because they're quite motivated to do so. And they tend to study better than the kids of Indian extract in the West. They tend to study better than kids of white Caucasian background because they're more motivated to do so. They are still largely enamored of the idea of modern civilization and how wonderful it is and all the benefits and can bestow upon us. And that seems to be just talking euphemistically here. That seems to be largely the attitude of many of our non-Indian leaders also, that the idea of setting up an alternative to modern society has largely been supplanted with the idea of becoming a respectable part of it. which is not so promising for establishing alternative communities. Because if you think that modern life is wonderful, then what do you want to bother with an alternative for? However, there are many people who are not members of ISKCON and probably never even heard of ISKCON, who are disaffected with modern life. And in that sense, they are more intelligent than many of our devotees. Yeah, anyone who thinks that the modern civilization is something desirable or favorable for anything except going to hell is a complete idiot. That is, I can base that on Shastra, it's not just my opinion. That kama krodas tata lobhas tasmat etat trayang tyajit trividham narakasya idam dwaram nashanam atmanaha. Lust, greed, and anger are the three gates to hell, and they should therefore be given up. But the whole modern civilization, it's just a word you use, civilization. It's not, well, it's some kind of social organization of people of barbaric motives. It is sophisticated and complex, but as Mahatma Gandhi said, when he was asked what he thought of Western civilization, he thought, it sounds like it would be a good idea. You didn't get that one. Maybe you heard it before. In other words, there is no such thing as Western. It's not civilized. So there are many people in the Western world who don't believe all the garbage that's served up to them from the time of their birth or even before in the name of culture, education, nationalism, and all these other ideas that convert people into willing slaves of a system which destroys them not only spiritually but even materially. I've quoted that a couple of times recently. I'll quote it again. This Alexander Solzhenitsyn, a Russian dissenter during the Soviet period, was considered a great hero in the West for being a dissenter against the Soviet system. So somehow or other they let him out of Russia. I guess they thought they couldn't just kill him, he was too famous. And they let him out. Even they cared somewhat for public opinion, not much. So they let him out and he went to America and he wrote some famous books. And he was called to give a keynote address at Harvard University, which he opened by saying that in Russia the people are slaves, which the people like to hear, and in America they're also slaves. But the difference is that in Russia they know that they are slaves, but in America they don't know. They're enslaved by lust and enticements of material happiness and the economic system and the debt trap, debt slaves. That's a common term now in America. Have you heard that? Debt slaves? You didn't hear that. I heard it. The power of the internet. That you become... You're in debt, then you're a slave. You're tied. You can't go anywhere. You can't do. You have to work, 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 work. So there are people. It is a phenomenon in America now that people who've been through the whole education system, young people who are well qualified, work 1 or 2 years in it, and then they think, hey, I don't spend the rest of my life doing this, and they get out to the country and get themselves some land and start living simply. Even without reading Srila Prabhupada's books, they have enough sense to understand that, what do you want to live your whole life in this sick society for? Just get out and live simply, without any higher spiritual motive. So our movement, or this back to the land, live simply, chant Hare Krishna movement, can expect some support, maybe from non-devotees, more than from devotees in the West. In India, there are some moves like that. It's not well articulated or published, but there are people in various ways who it's beginning. Organic food and few things like that. But it's not very well developed understanding. There is some understanding that people are being exploited. The lower India's prosperity is based on the exploitation of the least or the most vulnerable people. But there's not much talk about this, because actually all the economies that have become prominent in the world, they all did so or continue to do so, continue to remain so, due to exploitation of poor and vulnerable people. And that's going on even now. Although in America, for instance, people talk a lot about human rights, but their very prosperity is largely based on the exploitation of people, for instance, in factories in China and in chocolate production in Africa and so on. So they can enjoy a comfortable life at the expense of others. So we may get some support from outside, but we should start to cultivate that also, start to propagate it. We have one project in Gujarat, and Gujarati Bhagavad Darshan, we should propagate through Bhagavad Darshan. And when we get the projects going a little bit, we should start to think about bringing politicians and other people, journalists, and showing them and explain, make a point of our devotees, at least some of them, should know why we are doing what we are doing and be able to explain that to others and anticipate their objections. So we should know what the big picture is. Why? What are the reasons that we're moving to the land? And actually we're not just moving to the land, but we want to say that, well, this is how the whole of society should be. And we also have to consider then, okay, if we say everyone should move to the land, and what about industry? We don't care much for industry, but if we stop it and then For instance, if the transport system in India doesn't run, as it does now, if the train system doesn't move, then the military will be affected, and that's a very important consideration, seeing as there's Pakistan up in the northwest and China to the north, and if India becomes militarily weak, then, the Taliban there in Pakistan are openly talking about they want to take over Pakistan first, and next, India, which they consider is their ancestral property. Used to be Islamic rule. Yeah. Well, it wasn't ruled by Muslims. It wasn't Islamic rule, but it was ruled by Muslims. So that is a danger. And there was some survey in Pakistan that among the young people, which is the majority of the population, the majority of them would prefer rule either by the Taliban or by an authority military system. And the Pakistani military is infiltrated by the Taliban also. These are very real considerations. It's not just something in a newspaper, but these are very real considerations which we have to think of. And India is, although maybe militarily prepared, is ideologically not at all prepared for this. So we have to work on these things also. We have a lot to do in the ideological department. It's all interlinked. It's practical. And what we might call theoretical. It's all interlinked. So we're talking about living simply, but we need at least the position, the permission, if not the support of the broader society to do so. If we start making farm projects here and there, there may be widespread opposition that this is anti-national, stopping the proper education. There may be also fought by force that you have to follow a certain curriculum. You can't follow this Vedic curriculum. So these are all matters that we should anticipate, and we have to start preaching and preparing people for this also. Otherwise, we many people are going to start getting alarmed if they see that there are many, many good people who could be serving the nation, and instead they've run off to the country to become farmers and squandering their ability, which should be used in the service. We can say it's the service of the nation, but their concept of it is something different. And same thing in other countries, just like in America. If the Amish, is that how it's pronounced? I never got it right. Amish. People, they like to visit them as a tourist item, but if many people started becoming like that, it would be considered a threat to the prosperity and security of the nation. Because you need, among other things, you need to maintain America's military dominance, which is very central point of American polity. Then you need many scientists, people trained in science, to man their computers and do research. And Krishnakirti Prabhu was writing about fighting with machine guns, tanks, planes, and nuclear missiles, but there may be all kinds of things like sonic weapons and maybe other more sophisticated and nasty things even than that. So it is required, mundane education is required to maintain the military strength and of course the economic position of. You need to maintain the complex society as it is today. You require large numbers of people who are highly educated and competent to work within that system, to keep it going. So as these Varnashram projects expand, we can expect opposition from people who say this is anti-national, which is, it's a very motivating call, anti-national. So if you hear that, traitor, you're working against the national interest, just like this Narendra Modi in Gujarat, those who are opposing the Narmada Dam, he said they are enemies of Gujarat. Because the Narmada Dam, apart from its bad effects, it was supposed to help agriculture by providing water and then by providing not only helping agriculture, but bringing water supply to dry, large areas of urban areas which require water also, and also electricity for industry. So this is a very, what's the word? I can't exactly find it. It's a very motivational, very. If someone hears that you're anti-national, especially in a time when there's a perceived threat from outside, then it's to say that you're working against the interest of the nation. And then is people hear that and then they can't listen to anything you have to say. It's considered the worst possible heresy to be anti-national with this idea of nationalism, which was just invented actually in a little more than 100 years ago. Otherwise, there was no such thing as nationalism. So, Krishnakirti Prabhu's second point, the
economy of a future Varnashram civilization at best must necessarily be a hybrid of agrarian, industrial, and knowledge-based technical economies. So that point should be fairly clear, considering what I just said. Of course, there is also the possibility of a societal collapse in various ways. I mean, all kinds of things. All kinds of things that could happen that we can't imagine just now. Just like major changes in the world have taken place within recent history, that means within the last 2,000 years or so, due to factors which were no one could have imagined, no one could control, and no one even instigated, namely epidemics. The Black Plague wiped out large parts of the population of the world. Just after the First World War, there was an epidemic of Asian flu, it was blamed on Asians, which wiped out in about the same time as the First World War, it wiped out a significantly larger part of the population of the world than the First World War had done. So these can, such, or economic collapse. There was this, in between the two world wars, there was the depression, and no one knew at the time that the world would emerge from that. It could have, theoretically, it could have gone on spiraling down and down and down until the world reverted to what they call the Dark Ages, in which there's just chaos in society and very raw and rough way of living. So anything can happen at any time, and the possibility of societal, widespread societal breakdown is always there. But we can't make plans based on that. We should rather plan on what appears to be the foreseeable future. That the industrialized society will continue on its present course. It's sensible to plan like that. And at the same time be aware that other things can happen. But it is sensible to plan that the way society has been going on, more or less, for how long? How far back do you go? At least within all of our lifetimes, the society, the trends within society, here in India we see what we can broadly call westernization, modernization, industrialization, urbanization. We can expect that these trends will continue. If not, if there is some sudden change, then we also have to change with it. And we can bear that in mind. But we have a very different, we are setting up, at least microcosmically, a very different kind of society. That is our aim. And we want to show to the world that this is a better way to live and to do things. But at the same time, we just can't ignore that there is a big wide world out there which may or may not like us, probably won't understand us. They may understand to some extent the simple living part, but the high living part, the Krishna consciousness part, is very difficult for most people to understand. Actually, in India, many people can relate to the Krishna consciousness part better than the simple living part. And in the Western world, they can relate to the simple living part more than the Krishna consciousness part. That's a generalization. So we have to consider what are we aiming at? If people ask us, if intelligent, thoughtful people ask us, well, what is your ultimate aim? We should be ready to reply. And if we say, well, we want everyone to live very simply, and then what do we reply? If they say, Well, Pakistan has nuclear missiles, by which they would dominate India, take over India, if it wasn't for the fact that India also has nuclear missiles. So, what do you propose? Close down, and you don't just keep some farms with bullock carts and then somewhere in a corner keep nuclear missiles to keep Pakistan quiet. But you have to have a whole... Another thing, we're not anti-Pakistani per se, but it is a real threat to everything that we want to establish, which is based on, in India, at least we're allowed to do such things. We don't expect that we would be allowed to start Krishna-conscious communities in Pakistan or to preach about it. So, however much we may lament about the state of Indian politics, we'd rather have, even at its present corrupt level, we'd still rather have it than having Pakistan overrun India. So you can't keep nuclear missiles just in some farmyard. You have to have industrial society to back it up, and you have to always upgrade your weaponry, because that's what everyone else is doing. If you fall behind in upgrading your weaponry, then you become liable to be overrun by those who have more sophisticated weaponry. And that requires scientists and technologists to do research. You have to train the military, keep them always ready. That requires money, requires education in that regard. So it's practically... Unless anyone has any idea how to do this, and we're not going to talk about invoking miracles, because that's not part of the equation here. Realistically speaking, even to think about having a widespread Varnashram agrarian-based community, we cannot jettison industrial society altogether. So what are the answers to these questions? I don't know. But at least we have to think about them. And we just as we are discussing about how practically to run on these Varnashram communities, we have to think. We have to have thinkers like Krishnakirti Prabhu, who's thinking about these things, and how do we present this? It may be that all kinds of things can happen. There could be, for instance, it is quite possible that India could, within a short time, face political chaos. It's quite possible if in the next election, which is coming up soon, supposed to come up soon. There are many smaller parties come up and they can't cooperate with each other, and a military takeover could be, although the Indian military is trained to be aloof from politics. But I'm just saying this kind of thing could happen. And then, as happened in Ukraine, one devotee told me, one godbrother of mine, he's preaching in Ukraine. He's been preaching there for many years. And Ukraine, unexpectedly, achieving its... With the breakdown of the Soviet Union, Ukraine suddenly and unexpectedly achieved independence, political independence. So... they didn't have to continue being communist. But they didn't also have to take up the Western model of economics and polity. They didn't have to do that. So this devotee told me that some leaders, I'm not sure whether they were political leaders or political advisors, they asked him that, well, okay, we had communism, we don't want it anymore. And when we look to the West and see capitalism, they could probably see that their accepting the Western model would mean that they'd become a pawn of the Western powers headed by the United States. And so they said, we don't want that either. Can you suggest an alternative? You have, there's all this Varnashram. And although this devotee himself is strongly promoting the Varnashram vision, he said that when he was faced with that, he didn't know what to say. We should be ready. We need to discuss this. It may seem that it has no relevance to what we're doing on our little, trying to get our little farms and schools together, but actually we should be ready. We have to discuss these things also. We have to be prepared. It can happen, and it could be that within a matter of days or weeks, we could, our devotees could guide whole countries, or at least one whole country, toward Varnashram, Krishna consciousness. There'd be many questions. How do you do it? Do you do some cultural revolution as was attempted with horrible results in China, but they got what they wanted. They established communism at the expense of many human lives. In Kampuchea, they attempted the same thing, and all they got was a lot of people killed, and they didn't establish anything. I mean, politically speaking, China, overall, you could say from a materialistic point of view that China did benefit from, in some ways, from the communist rule. At least the country was united, and speaking very generally here, the kind of political turmoil that they had experienced prior to that stopped by force. But the attempted cultural revolution, when they saw that communism as they envisaged it wasn't really happening, their attempt to make it work overnight, figuratively speaking, it really didn't work. It plunged the country into chaos, and many people were killed, and there was terror throughout the country. So how, just we should think, okay, here's a powerful leader of a country, he wants to move his country to Varnashram society, based on Krishna consciousness. How do we do it? Do we forcibly divide people into varnas? Do we make them chant Hare Krishna like that? Who is that? Vishnu Varadana? He became a disciple of Srinivasa Acharya. He stole all his books because his astrologer told him there's a priceless treasure in those caskets. And then he stole all the caskets and found just some books. There's a Shatsandarbha and Hari Bhakti Vilas and Chaitanya Charitamrita, but for a bandit, he thought, what's this useless thing? So eventually he became a disciple of Srinivasa Acharya, the king of that area, and he made a rule that everyone has to chant, I can't remember, one round or four rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra daily. And many people, they didn't like it. In Iran, there was the Iranian Revolution, which when I was young, growing up just outside in London, I often used to go into London, and in the underground, the tube, where the railway goes underground in London, we often used to see graffiti written there, something written in Farsi script, and in English it would be written, "Death to the Shah," because there are many Iranian students in London at the time. So it was a popular movement that overthrew the Shah of Iran, and Islamic rule was established overnight. Iran went from being a nominally Islamic country with pretty much Western, largely influenced by Western culture, and then overnight it went to being an Islamic country with Islamic rule, with a popular movement. Some years after that revolution, I met a godbrother of mine who'd been in Iran for maybe the first 10 years or 12 years of the after the revolution. I know what he was doing. I asked him, "Well, what's it like being there in that situation?" He said, "Most of the people, especially the more the middle class people, they hate it. The women want to have makeup and toenail polish and short skirts like they used to. And the men, the young men, they don't like. They want to drink and smoke. Well, smoking. They want to drink and have parties, and they don't like it at all." So that's a question. If we had the opportunity, would we just immediately bring it in, or do we try to prepare the people? How do you do it? How do you go about it? And could we make an unpopular movement that forces people to be Krishna conscious? All these things have to be considered. Going on with Krishna Kirti Prabhu's points, the system of education for such a society must necessarily teach all subjects required for both spiritual and material advancement. This is arguable. Krishna Kirti Prabhu has written here about the system of education, but not necessarily that there is one system of education. There could be more than one. That could also be considered. But definitely, to maintain industry, which will be required, unless somehow all of the world, all of a sudden, decides that Jai Jagannath. Well, even then, I return Jai Jagannath, but the Pratapa Rudra, he was well known to Gauriya Vaishnavas as a disciple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was having regular wars, not only on the northern front with the Muslim ruler of Bengal, but also on the southern front with Krishna Deva Rai, who was a Vaishnava also. So, you know, our ISKCON clashes between leaders, what's going to happen if we get a bigger society? We're going to have regular wars, or what's going to go on? Is Jagannath here and Vittal there? But they were fighting. So, there may be different systems of education. But definitely, subjects required for both spiritual and material advancement. Well, generally that is there. In Varnashram education also. Even the Brahmanas, they're not just taught spiritual subjects, they're taught material subjects so they can guide others, and they may specialize, just like Dronacharya. He was known as Acharya. He wasn't Acharya in the same sense that Nimbaka Acharya or Ramanuja Acharya, but he was Acharya of fighting. And we also speak of Ayurveda Acharya, Jyotish Acharya. So these are all material subjects, but that's also required. That's accepted in Vedic culture. In the modern context, does it mean also engineering acharya? That may be required also. We have to consider these things. The social structure of a varnashram civilization depends upon the avoidance of creating varna sankara, unwanted population, and the creation of good population. I think the emphasis should be rather on creating good population rather than avoiding the bad, although they are almost synonymous. Which has a temperament, creating good population, which has a temperament better suited to making spiritual advancement. So we have to consider all these things. One major factor in the modern world is the power of the mass media to shape people's attitudes, worldviews. But that's the mass media is not all-powerful. It is very powerful, but it's not all-powerful, because we see that despite the tremendous influence of the mass media in shaping people's outlooks, there are people who, and not only the mass media, the whole culture, the educational system, there are many people who rebel against that, and they, many people who don't trust what they read in the newspaper, who don't believe what they're taught at school. Not so much in India, but in the Western world it's quite prominent. What do you say? You're one of them. You join the Hare Krishna movement. But one reason you're able to distribute so many of Srila Prabhupada's books in America is because many people either consciously or subconsciously are looking for alternatives and realize that all the garbage that they've been fed with since they were born is actually garbage. That the stories of Western life, that get money, be rich, be happy, it's just a story. They used to tell fairy tales once upon a time, but now the fairy tale is, this is the time, work hard, get money, and you'll be happy. It's another kind of fairy tale, which many people don't believe. So, the mass media is certainly very powerful, and that should be utilized in spreading Krishna consciousness and establishing Krishna consciousness, but it's not all powerful. And there are always, especially in the modern world, if you want to look at history over the last 2,000 years or so, in most societies, wherever there is any form of education, there is also dissent against the established system. It usually begins with ideological dissent. So, going on, society must be stratified according to varnashram divisions, with the primary societal aim of regulating sexual reproduction. That's something amazing for modern people to hear. Well, they also believe in regulating sexual reproduction, but we're talking of it from a completely different angle. We're talking about what's that term? Euthenics, is it? What's that term for eugenics, control, breeding, human breeding. Which at the time, in the early 20th century, when eugenics was a widely accepted prospect, the argument for it was, well, will you breed dogs to get better dogs? You breed horses to get better dogs. Why not breed humans? And actually, that is a major part of the varnashram system: breeding, human breeding. Brahmins breed with Brahmins, and Kshatriyas with kshatriyas and so on. Big topic. At the present time, it's very difficult to even discuss this in a, what we might call a reasonable way, although the term reasonable is also something which has arisen from a modern Western outlook. It's very difficult because the idea of eugenics was picked up by one of the most influential people of the modern world, Adolf Hitler, and his application of the principle is considered despicable. Actually, it was despicable, and eugenics is now in the dustbin. But it is, and it was there previously also. It wasn't that society was, or let's put it the other way. Previously, all over the world, there were classes in society. There was an aristocracy. And aristocrats, they didn't marry down someone from the aristocratic class. They wouldn't marry someone, a man wouldn't marry the daughter of a potter or a street sweeper. They have to marry from the aristocracy. So that was there also. Varnashram principles to this end must be inculcated as far as possible for both rural and urban subpopulations. Yeah, we have to preach about it. To maintain such a civilization, it is imperative to create and perpetuate a class of brahmanas who can preside over all of the most important knowledge of areas of society, be they humanistic or technical, in order to maintain the spiritual focus of society. Be they humanistic or technical, I guess, I'm not exactly sure what is meant by that, but I guess that means secular topics, those which are, of course, in Vedic culture, the division between secular and spiritual, it's all subsumed under the heading dharmic. But still there is a difference. There is paravidya and aparavidya. But the brahmanas who are versed in paravidya, in spiritual subjects, they should also be the ones who teach the material subjects. That's the point here. To establish a modern Varnashram civilization, a class of brahmana preachers must be established to wage a culture war against all opposing doctrines and opposing social institutions and their champions. So that links us immediately to our immediate discussions of Gurukul. Apart from the immediate aim of giving the boys a good chance to be Krishna conscious, we want that at least some of them will come out of the Gurukul and be ready. Well, they'll need further training, be ready to fight ideologically for Krishna and present Krishna consciousness and the need for this kind of society. Srila Prabhupada said, I want brahmanas with the spirit of kshatriyas. And we find that many brahmanas in the past, they had this spirit, that very term, digvijayi, one who conquers all directions, that was there both for brahmanas and for kshatriyas. Kshatriyas by military conquest and brahmanas by intellectual conquest. So that spirit to go out there and conquer for Krishna, that should be there. Vaishnava acharyas, they don't get so much on this term digvijay. They think themselves a servant, but they have to. So we see also. What's that? There's some flies. Well, that title is there of Madhvacharya's biography, Madhva Suvijay, the victory of Madhva. His whole life is one of victory. He definitely went out and challenged everything. And that's there, that's our tradition. Shankara did that. Ramanuja did that against Shankara's ideas. Madhva did that against Shankara's ideas and Ramanuja's ideas. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also did that by synthesizing all the ideas. So, going through this quickly, because there are many things to say. Founded by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is the present and historic institution to promote and lead the effort of re-establishing the spiritual direction of human society. This has to be preached first and foremost within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It's meant to promote and lead the effort of re-establishing the spiritual direction of human society. It's very important to understand that we're supposed to lead it. Not that we're supposed to imitate these completely bogus so-called spiritualists. We have our own line. Krishna's line. The Acharya's line. So next point. To preserve ISKCON's purpose and mission, which is Srila Prabhupada's purpose and mission. Very good point. One that previously didn't have to be stated. There is an immediate need to train Brahmana preachers to defend ISKCON against opposing impersonal and voidist doctrines from within, I can add that, and to advance Vedic civilization. Such training will be the basis of a counter-reformation within ISKCON. In other words, Srila Prabhupada came and gave a very clear blueprint for the Krishna Consciousness Movement based on Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar Devotion, and so on. But within our movement there has been a reformation so that these principles have been reformed. So we need a counter-reformation. Revolution means to bring things back to the way they were, what they're supposed to be. Krishnakirti Prabhu writes, this training will be instrumental not only in protecting and strengthening ISKCON against opposing cultural influences, but will be useful in meeting the organization's preaching objectives. Yeah, he's touching on very big issues. How our movement has been infiltrated with and largely influenced by and doctrines and ideas that Srila Prabhupada didn't promote. Feminism is an obvious example. The first doctrines that must be opposed are those that are popular within society and at large and which have become influential within ISKCON. Yeah, so again. Feminism and just the general idea of appearing, the strong desire to appear acceptable to contemporary humanists and their values. I recently read something because I had written something opposing the promotion of an American congresswoman, which is something like an MLA in India, who herself promotes abortion. They don't call it abortion, they call it, what's it called nowadays? Fetus removal, removal of, not even fetus, tissue removal. It's like, you know, but it's not that tissue, it's abortion. Bruhatya, in Sanskrit, it's called killing of the embryo. And in modern Indian languages, it's called Garbhapat. Which means, actually it means miscarriage, but they don't want to use the word hatya, murder, which is the actual term, brunhatya. So I saw something in which one god sister of mine was asked to, another one devotee had become the campaign, employed by the campaign of someone in that area, not in another area, and was soliciting votes among the devotees, because this is in Lacha, where there's a large number of devotees, so the campaign manager for someone, some aspiring politician in that area, or aspiring for a political post, had appointed a devotee to campaign among the devotees to get their votes. And this god sister of mine asked this devotee, well, what's his or her, I can't remember, position on abortion? And the campaigner said, pro-choice, which means pro-abortion. Devotee. The devotee is promoting a political candidate who is pro-abortion. So, these ideas could not have been imagined, could have been part of Prabhupada's. It was not imaginable that someone would say, I'm a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, or I'm a disciple of a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and I'm promoting a political candidate who promotes abortion. It's just unimaginable. But these things are going on, and they have to be counteracted within our movement. This very extremely sick and sinful ideas which have entered, that somehow it's okay to promote abortion. I told you, right? It's just a matter of time before we have the Bhaktivedanta abortion clinic. They won't call it abortion clinic. Bhaktivedanta, I don't know, whatever the euphemistic to gynecological assistance or whatever they call it. It's just a matter of time, the way things are going on. So we need to oppose that, but then you have to be informed about the issues. For instance, I discussed this a little bit a few days ago in Salem. What do you do for women who are raped? Well, I did discuss it. As Srila Prabhupada said, you can't give life, therefore you have no right to take it away. That's, you may say, well, the woman was raped, but it's still a human fetus is there with the Atma, so you can't, in any circumstances. What about those whose pregnancy is dangerous? All these things have to be discussed. So, dominant perspectives in the social and psychological sciences, and which have been advanced within ISKCON by those with advanced degrees in these areas. Yeah, okay. All right, I'll just finish up quickly here. Didn't realize we ran on so long. Varnashram will be the social doctrine that will be advanced in opposition to all other social doctrines presently advanced within and outside ISKCON. Okay, I'll finish that. I didn't realize we'd gone on so much time. We do want to get on with our actual meeting as soon as possible. So please, all of you, go and take prasadam. And when you're all ready, we'll continue. Or we'll start our Varnashram and Gurukul meeting. Okay, yeah, give this.